the delegation from Plaza, the slave committee, the committee secretary and the researcher and the communication team, and the parliamentary monitoring group. Indeed, today's meeting of the Select Committee on Transport, Public Service and Administration and Public Works Infrastructure is geared towards receiving an update from Plaza in terms of the work that they are doing around the infrastructure. We will also deal with the minutes of the last meeting, and then thereafter that will be the end of the meeting. But the apologies that you have received, Committee Secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have received apologies from the minister who's attending cabinet meeting and also the deputy minister who's attending some family matters. And our true standing apologies for Honorable Mathebula and Honorable Landsman. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, great. No, thanks for those apologies. We have also noted the delegation that they will be joining us. We are informed that it will be Mr. Ngwako Magaipa, Mr. Sithole, Ms. Matlapeng, Mr. Davilos, and then the Plaza team. I see Mr. David Mpelo, the acting CEO, I believe, and then Mr. Imran, technical CEO, the Plaza Rail CEO, and the technical advisor in their respective office. So having said that, let me then get an advice from the committee secretary who is leading the presentation.
Chairperson, maybe let me pass it to Thandi to handle that one.
Good morning, Chairperson. It's supposed to be the acting CEO of Plaza. So I'm not sure whether he's connected through Anne-Marie. Can Anne-Marie and Kagiso clarify that?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Acting CEO, are you on the platform?
Good day, Chairperson. It's Kagiso from Plaza.
Yes, Kagiso.
They are connecting from the...
Can you help us?
Yes, they are connecting from the entire team is connecting from the boardroom there where the group C is going to present from.
Okay.
So I'm just checking with them what the problem could be.
They were less than while waiting for them to connect, can we deal with our minutes together?
Thank you, Chair. Let me request a record to flag the minutes.
Honorable members, this is the minutes of the 15th of July, where we were considering the reports that were adopted by the House yesterday. There were two reports that were considered, both the protocols relating to the Chicago Convention and also the report on the draft regulation of 116A. Those were the committee members that were in attendance. Any reflection on that? Let's then move to the guest. Those that attended. And the committee team. Those were the opening remarks that were made, and then the apologies recorded. and then the issues that were raised, and then comments on the protocol, and also the regulation, and the 5.1 and 5.2 indeed indicate the decision that was taken by the committee, and then the end. Any correction that honourable members would want to raise with regard to the minutes in the absence of that, can we then get a mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Moshodi. I move for adoption of the...
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Moshodi, for moving for the committee to adopt the minutes. Thank you. Can you get a second there?
I'll second, Honorable Bratislav.
Thank you, Honorable Team Bratislav, for seconding the minutes. Any contra-review? Therefore, in the absence of any counter-review, then the minutes are of the 15th is duly adopted. We can then move to our next item on the agenda. If we could be advised by Kahisho, if his team has managed to connect.
Chairperson. Yes, they are connected as Plaza ESCO. They are on the platform. You can call them the CEO, Chair.
Thank you. CEO, the platform is yours. Let me welcome you and your team, because when we started by sending a word of welcome, you were still struggling to connect. But now that your team is fully connected, let's welcome you to the meeting. And also extend the word of greetings to your delegation on behalf of the Select Committee. Over to you, CEO, Acting CEO.
Good morning, Chair, to you, to the Chairperson of our board, to honorable members, to officials.
My apology if you can switch the video on so that the public can see who's the CEO of Plaza who will be presenting.
I hope you can now see us. We're sitting in a boardroom. There I am sitting down together with the team. The rest of the other team members are online, so I'll be presenting from here. We do battle with today with the bandwidth is very low, so if we present on that together with the video, it may affect the presentation, Chair. So I'm not sure if we do continue like this with the video, or we can switch off the video once we've done the introduction, Chair, with your permission.
Yes, just do the introduction, and then from there you can then to minimize the challenge that you have, switch off the video.
Okay. With me in the room, Chair, I've got the CEO of our division, tech division. I've got the acting CEO of our real estate and property business. Online, I've got Kahisho. I've got other EXCO members. We also have got the chairperson of the board online as well, Chair.
Oh, thank you for that. Can we then hear from the chairperson of the board any remarks that the chairperson would want to make before the team continues?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson and the committee. I really not wanting to waste lots of time, but not to allow the group CEO to present
All I can say as a kind of introduction, Chairperson, is that we are continuing going forward. We continue going forward, sometimes maybe seems slow, but as you all know that the train or rail business is a hard business. It's a business that it has a long lead time period, which is what we are confronted with. But I can say to you that in our promises that we said we will need to do in 2022, we now know that Mabopane is online. We are working that Cape Town Central Line should halfway house in terms of the riding a train from Cape Town to Nyanga should happen by July this year. And then, of course, continue to go to Khayelitsha in December and Mitchell's Plain. So that's where we are, and we continue to work day and night on making sure that we achieve those results. On the issues of corridor development, the recovery of corridors out of the 46 corridors, I think the Group CEO will take us, will take the committee through that process. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair Ramatsakane, for those welcoming remarks. And indeed, you're also welcome to the meeting. Let me then give the reins back to the CEO.
Chair, if I may request, can you please fly to the presentation so we can then take the committee through the presentation, please? Okay, in presentation mode, next slide.
Recording in progress.
It is visible. The now audible CEO can start.
Okay. So Chair, I'm going to cover basically the four areas as the presentation that we've distributed. One is the introduction and the context, basically out of what we put together. Two is the modernization program that covers the rolling stock. It covers the new fleet renewal program. And then we'll look into the modernization of the signaling and communication as well. And the third part will be the rehabilitation of the network itself, Chair. And then lastly, we'll then get into the challenges that we incurring and facing within the network. Next slide, please. So in terms of our triple challenges that we're facing within the PRASA environment, Chair, and the committee members, there are three critical pillars which pose the challenges that we currently have to deal with within the rail, the passenger rail. One is the security of our infrastructure and the maintenance thereof. The other one is the rebuilding and the recovery of our network. As we know, two things happened. One was that security contracts were stopped at some point, which then opened up our network for vandalism and theft. And the other one was then immediately thereafter, we were faced with the pandemic. And that also, when we stopped the services, it then opened up our infrastructure as well for vandalism, further vandalism and theft. at a multiplied rate as well. So we are now faced not only with recovery, but in certain cases, because of the depletion and the dilapidation of our infrastructure and assets, in the rebuilding of that infrastructure, something that was not done for many, many, many years since the network itself was established. The last component, Chair, is the funding thereof, the funding of the environment, more so the operational part, which then covers one, the maintenance of the infrastructure, and two, the security itself, because that all of that comes from our operational expenditure, Chair. Next slide, please. So let me get into the three pillars of our modernization program, which is currently funded as per the capital expenditure and allocation that comes from the both Treasury and the Department. Next slide. So we've got the rolling stock, which is what we refer to as the yellow and the gray fleet. It's our old fleet, which according to the program should be looked into every 9 to 11 years cycle. We currently have got lots and lots of dots that has not been either maintained or overhauled. It is now out in public and has been spoken about that the old general overhaul, which was the old program, had a lot and lots of issues and also indicated as per the AG report.
Are we still together?
Chair, we seem to have lost connection on the system, so I'm going to use my laptop, and luckily I've had that as a backup, and apologies to you and the committee members. So I'm going to present off my laptop. It will not show the other members. It will just be me, and I'm hoping that you can see me as I present, Chair. And apologies.
Yes.
Okay.
No. I think that will help us in terms of mitigating the challenge that you're faced now.
Thank you, Chair. So this program, in terms of maintaining the old fleet, covers three areas. One is the general overhaul, which is the heavy maintenance. The other one is maintaining the wrecks and the accident damage. And the other one is the ordinary light, what we refer to as the ad hoc maintenance, but it's basically light maintenance of our fleet. We've invested heavily into this program to highlight to the committee members in terms of the type of investment that we're making in this environment. It's around 8 billion rands combined over a period of 5 years. So light maintenance on its own is around 500 million. And the bigger part, which will impact the industry, the rail industry, in terms of the maintenance and the heavy overhaul of our fleet, yellow and gray fleet, is around 7.5 billion rands over 5 years as well. Next slide.
Apologies, I've been disabled to share.
Oh, can we have that? Can we have that, Kubaga?
Sorted, sir.
Thank you.
Next slide, Anna Marie. So, Chair, just those pictures are just an indication of how our old fleet, the yellow and gray trains, look like. The windows, you look at the doors, you look at the floors, the way they've rusted, you look at the structure, the way they've rusted. You look at the connection points, including the suspensions and the undercarriage, you can see how much damage over time and the type of maintenance that's required to get this back into a state where they are usable and also we can then offer a decent ride and service to our commuters. Next slide, please. And this is a demonstration of what they go through. In essence, Chair, we take this completely apart and then rebuild from the ground up. So those are the pictures that shows you the progression in terms of what then happens in these repairs. And then it then does demonstrate and make sense on why we have to invest so much money into this. Also, what this means in terms of feeding the industry that's then basically investing into rail according to this, to what you're seeing in the pictures. Next slide, please. And then it shows you the final product once it's gone through all this process and the amount of money that's gone into this to bring that back into what you now see. And you see a demonstration of the normal metro rail on one side, and you also see the demonstration of our long distance passenger services, which we refer to as Sosholoza Mail. So both, once they've gone through this overall program, this is the outcome and the results of what you see after all the investment and where the money, the taxpayers' money has gone into. Next slide, please. So far, Chair, I am pleased to come to this committee, Chair, and share with you that we've now concluded the contract. We've appointed five contractors across all four regions. And the impact in terms of creating the jobs, there's a potential of creating around 2,000 jobs. What we're looking into in the next 5 years is basically refurbishing around 400 coaches in that, which will then create these jobs that we're talking about. And also, as part of the conditions of the contracts, we're infusing localization, number one, and number two, we also want to use this as an opportunity to create jobs for the youth as well, as you can see. So we maximizing this in response to what the president, I think, has alluded to in terms of creating economic impact through the projects that we're running within this space. Next slide, please. We now have what we refer to as the new fleet renewal program. Others refer to that as the Gibela project, what we call the Istimela Sabantu as the new product. And that is the project that's out in Danota. To date, we've got around 96 new trains that have been accepted. They're currently in distributed, but majority of those are currently in Pretoria, in Volmarten, in our yard. Others have been distributed into the different regions. We're currently sitting with around 14 in the Western Cape and 9 in KZN. Eastern Cape is the only one that does not have any at the moment, and we're looking into creating space for that. The reason why, Chair, that I need to highlight to the committee members is that the Eastern Cape network primarily is a Transnet network. What we're producing out in Danota uses a different type of electrical traction compared to what Transnet has got in their network. So we will need to have to customize some of those if we take them to the Eastern Cape, and it's something that we're looking into. We're looking at producing around 600 trains. That is the original business case into that. We're not there yet. So in the next phases, we should be able to get into that, and that's part of what we're negotiating currently with the build, operate, and transfer partners that are currently running that plant out in Danota. Next slide, please. Chair, there has been a huge economic impact out of this project, which eventually we're going to own as South Africa and as the state. The Gibela project has got bursaries, impact on bursary. We're looking at a transfer of technology, of the rail technology into the country, and we can see the benefits thereof to a point where I think we'll earn a potential to even export some of this should we want to do that as South Africa. We've developed artisans, local artisans. within the internships as well, we've infused, and I think we've created around close to 1,000 jobs in that environment, young engineers that have been employed in that environment as well. So there is impact in terms of skills development in country after this project. I think it's a success that we cannot let just rot or sit back without making the best out of it in terms of economic value. Next slide, please. The last pillar in the modernization, Chair, is the signaling and communications. Basically, this is the traffic control in the rail space. It's part of the automation. We currently have got issues in the network in that parts of the network is currently managed manually. It opens us up for accidents. And not only does it do that, but also inefficiencies in terms of the frequencies and the number of trips that we run in our network. So as soon as we've got the signaling automated across all the regions, Chair, it will then increase the number of trains and the frequencies and the number of trips, which then influences the number of commuters that we then transport within our network. And that we measure basically across all number of things. One is the interlockings and others is the control center itself, and then the equipment rooms. To highlight at a high level, Chair, Gauteng, we started in 2011. We're now finishing off. We're sitting around 99% within that project from a phase one point of view. Phase two, we're looking at finishing only in the next year. Signaling, if I may highlight to you and the members, takes a long time. We're currently embarking on a new one in KZN. We went out to the market and we're evaluating that. On its own, Chair and honorable members, that will cost the fiscus around 9 billion rands over a period. It's going to take us minimum 3 years to 5 years to roll that out. It's quite a heavy and also specialized type of technology in that space. But it does create multiple jobs across the regions, more so where it's done. In Gauteng, as I said, it's 99%. In the Western Cape, where we've had the Thales contract, that was delayed by the encroachment together with COVID, and we're busy dealing with that when it comes to the relocation of the people that have settled in our reserves. In KZN, we had a contractor that we had to cancel, as I said to honorable members. We've now embarked onto a new process to onboard new service providers, and that will give the committee an update as and when we go through that process. Next slide, please. So the KwaZulu-Natal progress is the one that I was talking about. That network, Chair, quickly, has been impacted by the flood disaster. We've got 9 corridors in that environment, three of which belong to Transnet and the 6 ours. So we collaborate and work closely with Transnet as we transverse and access each other's network to both freight and passenger. The southern part of the corridors in that environment were heavily affected by the washouts, which in certain cases, bridges and rail was hanging because soil had been washed away. So we have embarked on that as part of the national disaster as declared by the president. And we have quantified that impact to close to 3 billion rands, not only to revive the infrastructure, but also prepare that infrastructure and the asset base for newer climate impact so that it does not get impacted the same way it has in 2022. What we have now, we've gone and put a diesel traction at least to transport people in the KwaMashu area into Durban. But the southern part, we still haven't gotten there, and we are in the process of rebuilding that. Next slide, please. So we've got a new signaling and telecoms project, as I highlighted, between Gauteng and the Western Cape. We've got tenders that are out there, out in the market. We've approached the market and we're evaluating that. And I think the progress when we get to the inception and the triggering of the project themselves, I'll come back into this committee and come and highlight how far we've gone as soon as we've done that. KwaZulu-Natal is in there as well. But we're looking at a longer period, as I said. But the one part that I must quickly highlight to members is that we I think historically, had taken so long in terms of evaluating this tender. As an example, if I put it forward to the honorable members, it took us close to 3 years to evaluate and complete the geo tender. We're now looking at that because if we were to follow that same trend, it will take us very long to get to modernize and also rebuild our network. And we now have adopted a new model of accelerating this evaluation of the tenders as we get into it so that we can get the benefit back into the commuters. So part of this is to fuse in the evaluation of these tenders into a period of a maximum 2 months. And I can get into how we're doing into that without exposing much. Otherwise, it then compromise the process of the evaluation. But we squeeze in that so that we don't take too long to get to trigger these projects going forward. Next slide, please. So as you can see, that's work that's currently underway within the corridors. We closed three corridors in Gauteng that we're running diesel traction on. One is the Mamelodi line, which is what we call the Pinasport line. Yes. The other one is the Tembisa line, which we refer to as the Lerala line. And the third one is the Naledi to Park Station, Naledi to Joburg line, which we've closed as well. But part of that would be to create the path between Pretoria and Johannesburg. And this is where you start seeing Kalfontein to Olifantsfontein coming through. So that signaling is now underway as well as part of that modernization. So that work is underway, Chair and honorable members. And that's what you see in those pictures. The biggest threat that we have for in our infrastructure is currently security. Outside just putting bodies and boots on the ground, we're also technically looking at a solution. And what you're seeing in front of you, Chair and committee members, is that we're taking the very cables that vandals are taking and covering them with concrete to make it a lot more difficult for people to dig them out easily. It's something that I wouldn't have wanted to share publicly because then we expose this to vandalists. They now see what we're doing. So I will quickly move out of that without saying much. Let's get into the network itself and the rehabilitation. So there, Chair, I'm going to talk about what we're doing within the network. The chairperson of the board has highlighted that we've got a number of corridors that we operate in the passenger space. So we've got 40 corridors across all the regions, 18 of which were functional just before lockdown and the floods. So 17 corridors and 7 of which are functional in the Gauteng space. 9 corridors, as I said, in KZN, 3 of which were functional before the floods. But now we've only just recovered. We had put everything to a halt, complete halt after the floods, after the disaster, but we've now recovered one, which is the KwaMashu line. We're bringing in a portion of the Umlazi line, which what we refer to as a shuttle, and we're working on bringing the Stenga line, the Pinetown line, the Kelso line, and the Umlazi line. In the Western Cape, as I said, Chair, earlier on, we've got basically 2 lines, both of which belong to TFR, to Transnet, but we run passenger services on those lines. Western Cape, we've got 12 corridors, 6 of which are functional. You would have seen, honorable members, that we when we launched and opened the Northern Line, the Southern Line, And we're now currently working on opening the third part of the northern line, which is part of the central line, which we refer to as phase one. So in essence, if I'm to dwell a little bit deeper on the central line, because it's a big problem. We have a settlement in the Langa area, which initially stopped the trains from Cape Town into Bellville through that point, and also stopped the trains from Cape Town to Khayelitsha. So we're now working in phase one just to get the trains out of Cape Town into Langa, Langa into Bellville. But there are three paths onto that. One is Cape Town to Langa through Mutual, which currently is functional. We're now bringing the Cape Town to Langa through Pinelands. So we're busy working on that. And that line as well will then connect from Langa to Bellville via Sarepta. So that's our phase one that we're working on. And we're going to launch that now towards the end of July. 26th of July is our target to get the phase one of Central Line up. The other part, which we're now collaborating with the other state departments, human settlements in the public works coming to the party, HDA, which is part of the human settlements, the province and the city working together to resettle the people out of Philippi area and also Khayelitsha area, so that we can then be able to run trains straight from Langa into Khayelitsha. And unfortunately, that depends on that resettlement for us to start running trains out of that, because there are, if you go into the Philippi area, you will find they've put latrines and they've occupied the entire rail reserve. And not only that, they've also destroyed the formations on which the rail itself sits. So the foundation itself is destroyed. There are parts where around 10 kilometers worth of rail has been taken out completely in between Langa and Philippi and Yanga, that area, together with the stations. So they've been taken away. So that's the amount of work that we still need to do in Central Line. But we're working on getting that back by December, but with a provision and the dependency that the people will be resettled out of the rail reserve. So that's the summary in terms of the corridors. The issues that are coming up in terms of the rebuilding process is changing the culture itself within our own environment. If I may, Chair, we come from an operational environment separated from Transnet with a skill base that knows how to run trains. We are now having to have to rebuild or build the mindset to rebuild or recover corridors based on what we've gone through. And that's part of the culture and the personal commitment that we require. We also now also need to infuse a project management and a disciplined execution a mode into our people. And that's part of lessons that we're learning as we go. And then lastly, problem solving orientation within the people. So a huge cultural change that we need to infuse, and that's what we're working on. And you're going to start seeing the results as we go through that. Next slide, please. When we look at the problem at hand, Chair and honorable members, if we were to go and move and say we will recover the corridors fully, it's going to take us a lot longer. So we're taking that in phases, in a phased approach. One is to recover the limited service as it is and start running trains. We will then modernize and build efficiencies and optimize as we go along. But the first thing and the first focus to at least get the train running and give people access through the stations. And then we then optimize as we go. And that is the reason why you see recovered limited service recovery, and then a full service later on. Primarily because part of a full service is the signaling, which I highlighted earlier on, that it takes longer for us to rebuild signaling. So fully, to get to a point where everything is fully automated, is going to take us a little bit longer because of the nature of signaling itself. But we are on the path to do that. But what's important here is that we are going to recover the services, and that's what we're focusing on. Next slide, please. So in terms of the corridors, I've highlighted the 40 corridors that we have, and the fact that we've got 18 functional, but the focus on the 10 priority corridors as announced in the State of Nation address by the President is on the 10. And the 10 are distributed according to the table that's in front of you. We currently have got focusing on 4 in Gauteng, and we've got the Southern Line and the Northern Line in Western Cape, together with Central Line and its faces. And then in KZN, we've got the Durban to Umlazi and also Durban to Kwamash. Why the 10 priority corridors to honorable members? Just go back to the previous slide, please. Is that we have seen that the movement of our people in Gauteng will be between Pretoria primarily and Johannesburg. So Soweto to Mabopane, Soweto to Mamelodi. So we do need that entire backbone corridor, which then talks about Joburg, connecting Joburg and Pretoria. We know where the big dambas and our commuters come from, which is the reason why Mabopane is a focus. Pinasport, which is Mamelodi, is a focus. And then Naledi, which is the Soweto component, is a focus. But for us to do an end-to-end, we then also have to connect Park Station to Pretoria through the Kalfontein area, which is the reason why you see Pretoria to Kalfontein as part of the picture. We have since closed, as I said, the Mamelodi Lake. We've closed the Tembisa Lake. We've closed the Naledi Lake so that it gives us time to recover that. We have to, because we cannot recover or rebuild the rail while the trains are running. And we've appealed to the communities to give us that space, and we've been granted that through the engagement with the communities accordingly. There are dates associated with that. We're looking at a maximum of 4 months of recovering those corridors. Mabopane and Soulsville are currently running on a limited service. We're working on that signaling component so that we can then optimize them going forward. In the Western Cape, as I highlighted, phase one is coming now in July, towards the end of July. The retreat side and the Simonstown lines have been recovered. They are running. I must quickly highlight that both the lines that I'm referring to as the recovered lines are running on the blue and gray trains, the newer trains. KZN, as we speak, we have not put any of the new trains in there. This part has taken a life of its own, and we're managing that as part of the disaster. We're accelerating that. It's a lot more work. We were further down the road in terms of recovering some of this up until we were hit by the floods. Next slide, please. In terms of the progress to date, in terms of service recovery, you will see that the Pinasport, which is the Mamelodi component, we've broadly around 69% of the work. And there, Chair, we're looking at September service resumption in there. And then we've got Naledi. Naledi is running a little bit behind. Work has started. We should accelerate that as well. Part of our acceleration, honorable members and Chair, is our partnership with our service providers, the industry. Previously, the industry would give us a period of recovery of around 8-9 months, and we'll take it as that. We've now gotten to a point where we're asking them and we're negotiating with them on, in terms of shrinking these delivery timelines into shorter time so that we can get the trains back. And I must quickly highlight that they've come to the party, the industry has come to the party. Yes, it comes with a cost, but it allows us to bring the services back a lot quicker, which is the reason why you're seeing these days of around August and September being highlighted as part of our delivery into that. We're seeing Pinasport coming a little bit earlier, and then the Pretoria to Kalfontein coming a little bit earlier. We're working very hard into getting Naledi and Lerala back onto that accelerated plan as well. So you would see the dates around September. So around September, there'll be a lot of these recoveries and relaunching of these trains back, and that's what we've promised the commuters. Next slide, please. So as you can see, that's part of the progress. We've got teams on the ground. So yes, we've closed the corridors for recovery. We've put the teams down. We put in the cables back online. And also, I want to highlight that the agreement with the service providers is that when they are working on site and busy putting this infrastructure back, they secure it up until the time when they hand over to us. We're preparing as well, and we are prepared. We have now also beefed up our security to a point where we will take over. An example of that and the impact thereof is within the Mabopane line, where we've recovered it in a similar fashion. We've learned a lot out of that. There's not been a single incident in that environment in as far as infrastructure destruction is concerned or security issues in that area. So as you can see, we're putting back the cables. It's still a risk. And we're coming out. We need to invest a lot more in our security. Next slide, please. The feeding of the lines and energizing the network as well through the substations. Finasport as an example in front of you. We've done and redesigned and strengthened the substation so that vandalists don't find it a lot easier to get into our infrastructure. But we are still exposed in that where they cannot get into our infrastructure, they would look into getting into the ESCOM infrastructure. And as an example, in the Western Cape, where they, instead of getting into our secured environment, they went into ESCOM and stole cables, which then affected our cable. So it does require that we collaborate a lot closer between ourselves, ESCOM, the likes of City Power, and also Transnet to secure the infrastructure. Next slide, please. So the challenges following the recovery basically are at a very high level, which we're dealing with at the moment. One which I highlighted earlier on is the capacity itself, which requires both skill and also the change in culture and the change of doing things. So I've highlighted that. But quickly to highlight that, we're also partnering with our sister SOEs. In this case, Transnet has got capacity, and we're using Transnet to rebuild the rails in KwaZulu-Natal and also in the Western Cape because they've got the capacity. The encroachment remains a problem. In Central Line in particular, in the Western Cape, that's quite in your face, and that's what we're dealing with. In Mabopane, it was a lot easier to relocate and move those people. And then the theft and vandalism, we need to deal with that. We're investing close to R1 billion in security. But it's still not enough because, as I said, if they don't attack us, they attack Transnet. If they don't attack Transnet, they attack ESCOM or all of us, which requires, I think, the state to look into this more in a collaborated fashion. We also have got issues of the communities of tender hijacking. So where we're starting projects, and one could argue that because of joblessness, people, when they see these opportunities, they want also to be involved. But there are times when they do hijack this and they say, you cannot start with this project unless we're involved in one way or another. But we are proactively engaging these communities to offer them work. Where there's manual labor, we do negotiate with the councillors and the community leaders to allow us to work, but also offer them work depending on what needs to be done. Whether it's in the security space and hiring local people in those environments where we've got this project. If it's in the cleaning space, we're doing the same. If it's manual labor that's required for the rail repairs, we're doing the same. There are areas where we've hired close to 180 people in the rail space to assist with the manual work. There are areas where we're now looking at hiring around 200 people in the security space. We're also learning that we need to the closer the people to the rail, the easier it is to protect that. So people tend to protect what they are closer to and what they work on. The climate changes, as I said earlier on, we're finding technical solutions to some of this. Chair and honorable members, our rail network is old and it was designed and built many months ago. We never anticipated climate changes like we are. We never anticipated other issues that are brought up by the spatial developments that we have. If I'm to give you an example, around Umlazi, there's an area called Zweletu, and people have settled there. And that settlement has changed the structure of the soil. So when the floods came through, it wiped the entire soil base straight through onto our rail network, which is what we need to deal with going forward. So the question is, how do we then make sure that technically we then protect the rail reserve from being flooded like that, which would include putting in embankments and concrete walls across that. It's going to cost us money, but it's some of those things that we need to do going forward. Sourcing of material, which is a logistic problem, more especially due to COVID, we've had to deal with that. We're still dealing with that as we speak. There's an impact on chips on the digital sides, which impacts our delivery timelines. We've also had impact on some of the cables, but it's getting a lot easier as we go. We also had impact in terms of sourcing transformers in certain cases from overseas. So both logistics and also manufacturing that's being done from outside the country have been impacted out of that. But we are mitigating, we are negotiating, and we are accelerating with the partnership of service providers and the industry. Next slide, please. What do we require to carry on and recover the network? Four areas, in essence, that we would like to highlight to this committee, Chair, to you and your honourable members. One is security is a fundamental in the rebuilding and securing of our assets. Otherwise, we rebuild today and put money down, and it gets taken away tomorrow, and the people in the economy are impacted. So we do need that to be looked into, but not only looked into as a PRASA problem, but as a national problem. I think, in as much as cable theft, for instance, is a global problem, South Africa has got to look into this as an integrated approach than to look it into and say Transnet has got to solve its own problem, or Eskom has got to solve its own security problem, and so does PRASA. So we also need to collaborate at that level. And the funding thereof as well needs to come into the picture. It's we're dealing with syndicates in certain cases. We're dealing with huge scrap metals problem that then also suck in our cables and our parts of our infrastructure into that as part of the commodities. Next slide, please. Next slide quickly so I can conclude in here. The last part, honorable members and the chair, is the funding. So over the last 8 or 9 years, I think we've operated at a certain level of subsidy, and we do need to relook into this, because it has affected, and as much as we've got enough of the capital expenditure or capital allocated into our projects, I think we need a balanced approach in terms of the capital versus the operational side, which then affects the likes of maintenance and the likes of security as well. It's opened up a hole over time in terms of creditors, so we're exposed on that. More so when you look at the impact that comes from the depletion in terms of our patronage. You'll see I've highlighted there that our long distance trains have impacted over the last 10 years, depleted from 3 million into 276, and that's now moved into the other modes of transport. Our metro rail itself from 646 million down to 147 over the period of 10 years, and that's moved into other modes of transport, and the bus as well. So we do need that to be looked into, a balanced approach in terms of funding to look into that, more so when we get into the strategy that comes from the Department of Transport, which we're responding to, the road to rail strategy. But not only should we look into that in that fashion, but also from an intermodal point of view, because the other modes of transport don't also assist. We're a fixed type of infrastructure and not flexible to carry in the newer special development. And we'll need to partner in the intermodal space. And it does require us to consider that and look and liaise and collaborate with the other transport authorities. Fare revenue has been depleted as well as a result of the depletion of our patronage as well. So lastly, onto this, we do need to look into our subsidy formula. As I said, a balanced form of funding needs to be looked into that, but we are dealing with that, and that discussion is carrying on between ourselves and the Department of Transport and National Treasury. So that business case is on the table as we speak. We are facing another problem when it comes to long distance passenger services, in that it relies much on the Transnet infrastructure. We run our infrastructure primarily is within the metro environment. So when the Transnet infrastructure is under attack, our services also suffer. So that needs to be looked into. So security of the Transnet infrastructure means we benefit as well. And when they get attacked, we also get impacted as well. It is part of the reason why you're seeing the Shosholoza Mail is not necessarily up and running as the way we would like it to, because that infrastructure is getting attacked all the time. Transnet debt itself, there's an old debt of around 2.4 billion that we owe to Transnet. We're busy discussing with the Department of Transport and National Treasury on settling that. We've come to a number at the moment of around 1.6 billion, which I think there are discussions at the moment as we speak around settling that between ourselves. Next slide, please. Security space, I'm not gonna dwell much except that we need to look into this 1 billion rand of funding for the next 3 years. As we recover and the patronage comes back to rail, we're gonna need assistance more so in the security space. Yes, we've got money allocated into recovering our infrastructure, but we need an allocation to protect it as well, both from a boots on the ground and also technology-wise and the collaboration that's required. Next slide, please. So as a summary, Chair and honorable members, we've put a table in front of you in terms of what we require. We do need this, and it's a discussion that we're having with National Treasury at the moment. As I said, the business case is sitting in front of the department to take it on our behalf to National Treasury. The balance approach that I referred to is required. We've got enough capital as we speak allocated for recoveries, allocated for modernization, but the operational part is currently impacted. And all we're asking for is permission and authority to transfer this 6.9 billion from capital funding into operational funding. And that will help us alleviate a lot of other operational problems that we're currently having. So Autopex, for instance, need to get out of business rescue. It's sitting in business rescue. So a total of around 1.5 billion is required in the Autopex space. The failure of Autopex for long distance bus transport means market failure in certain cases. And we've seen some of these routes all of a sudden costing commuters more than double what they used to pay when they were using Autopex cities to city and Translux. So we do need the existence of Autopex, and we need to get it out of business rescue. And that there's 1.5 billion that we're asking in that space. On the long outstanding debt, Chair and honorable members, we're looking at around 1.7 billion. It's long, it's old, but we need to settle that so that we can then get into a proper operational spend and also run a proper rationalized business as well. It does require, I must highlight, that we need to reconsider and relook at ourselves in terms of efficiencies, and we're looking into that as we speak. So honorable members and Chair, that would be our presentation. I think that was our last slide. I would wait for questions of clarity to you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Sampilo, for taking us through the presentation on the work that you are doing on your three pillars. Mainly around the modernization program, rehabilitation, and also funding required. I will now open the floor to honorable members to engage with the presentation. I've noted the honorable Dango, I've noted honorable Tim Bratislav, I've noted honorable...
I just wanted to know if I can stop sharing, but I did.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. And then
sorry.
In that term. Honorable Dango?
Yes, Chairperson. Chairperson, there are three lines in Gauteng that carries millions of people. That's the Naledi Joburg line, the line that runs from Kliptown through to Naledi or to Fynetown onto the Park Station, and then the Randfontein Springs line. Can I get some indication as to exactly, I mean, he spoke about the Naledi Joburg line, when all three of these lines will come back, because we're talking about more than 2.5 million people without cheap, efficient transport in this area. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Dabo. Honorable Patrice.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the first thing I'd like to just say is to thank you to Mr. Mpelo for his presentation. I get the sense that he is frustrated with the situation at Prasa and would like to have it turned around, and we certainly support him in those efforts. The reality, Chair, is that a massive amount of our our compatriots in this country. Sorry, Chair.
My apology, Honorable Patrice. Anna-Marie seems to be a challenge on muting. Can you mute your gadget? Over to you, Honorable Patrice.
Thank you. Yeah. Look, the reality is that in South Africa, the cheapest form of transport is rail. And we are currently cutting off a massive section, as Honorable Dangle mentioned, of our communities from their workplaces, from shopping environments, from any commercial activities. And we all know transport equals mobility and mobility equals freedom. And so this is the most pressing thing that we have to deal with. And Chair, before I get into my questions, I just want to say that I think it's important that we have a regular, and this will have to come to you, Chair, a regular engagement with PROS, that we don't see them in a year's time, but maybe we see them on a quarterly basis to get updates on all these plans that they've rolled out or that they've presented to us this morning. I really would like to urge that this committee places PROS at the center of our focus, and that we really, really focus on working with PROSA, but that we engage them regularly. Let me get into my questions, Chairperson. I'm sorry, I do have quite a few of them, but I'll try to go through them as quickly as I possibly can. On slide 10, and I'm just opening up my slides here so I can just go through. On slide 10, this now relates to refurbishments. Mr. Mpela, I'm very concerned that under the notes on slide 10, if you can go there, it says that five contractors were appointed to do this work, but four of the five contractors appointed are new entrants, which will require to be developed. I'm very, very concerned that we have new entrants into the refurbishment market, and that we could have a situation, let's say in a year's time, where you report to us that these new entrants didn't have the skills and the know-how how to do the refurbishments, and as a result, we've lost more money. So the question is why on earth have we gone for four new entrants into the market? That's, and then your own notes say, which were required to be developed. I mean, are we awarding tenders and then allowing people onto site that need to be taught how to do the job? I mean, for me, it's absolutely nonsensical. You skimmed over it very quickly in your presentation, but I really would like to dig into that. And then you referred to the training, the last note there is each contractor will be required to train at least 20 youth per year. And I fully support that. I believe that there should be a corporate social responsibility with every tender we award in South Africa. But my question is that a lot of contractors then regard that as a tick box exercise. And I would like to see from yourselves or your response to what sort of training will they receive? And who will evaluate that training? So that we give a contractor a job to train at least 20 youth per year. I think it could be more. But at the end of the day, that person's got to come out with something that's worth something so that they can go and find another job somewhere else. So they have to come up with some sort of certificate, some sort of a qualification that's approved by SACWA. And so that these young people that are being trained can actually use that training and not only put it down as experience, but actually can use the training. So if I can just get a response on that. Then in a similar vein on slide 12, there's a whole list of bursaries, transfer of technology, internships, community artisans, the same thing, the same question. I'd like to know what sort of SACWA qualifications these folks walk away with after the engagement with Gabela. That's very, very important that we actually are training, and it's not just, Chair, I'm very concerned about tick box exercises. You can say, yes, we've trained 20 people. We need to be able to, as Parliament, say, right, well, tell us, maybe not the names, but tell us, right, trainee one was trained in this and they have this qualification. You need to go to that level of detail, Chair, to make sure that these things are not tick box exercises, but actually having an impact. Then on slide 15, we have control systems. There's a control system in point number four, Gauteng and Western Cape Prasa rail control systems. Point number five, national electronic authorization systems that we know has got a major problem. And then we've got national GSM operational portable radio handheld. And all of those advertisements on hold. Can we please just get, if this is so urgent and we're trying to move as fast as we can to get the lines up and running, why are those three items on hold? If we can get an answer on that. Then slide 27, if I can just skim through to that. Let's get there. So now slide 27, security. It's noted there that under the second point, which is security open system, one of the mitigations is walling of rail boundaries and technology. And it says long-term there. I'm sure the committee would like to know what long-term means. I hate that sort of thing. And tell us long-term, tell us 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. Long-term is how long is a piece of string? And that's really not satisfactory. We need to have a time period on that so that we can hold PRASA to account. PRASA needs to come back in 3 months' time and tell us how far they're on walling of rail boundaries, for instance. And then the other point on that is, has PRASA looked into drone technology? It's impossible to have a security guard at every single point along a railway line. But it is certainly possible to have industrial size drones operated, frankly, by young people who are gamers, and I'm sure Mr. Impella is young enough to know what I'm talking about, that do this all day long in their spare time, who can operate drones that can fly up and down the lines and pick up instances of vandalism, pick up instances of theft, arson, et cetera, and then can direct, they can take video footage of it, they can take video footage of the perpetrators to the point where they can be identified. All that tech is available, it's all there. And then they can also deploy security forces to those hotspots to go and intervene immediately. I really think that, so the question is to Prasa is, have they considered drone technology and how we can possibly use it to monitor our railway corridors? And then obviously, how long is this walling going to take? Then slide 28, the next slide, speaks to a solution to funding. Okay, it's obvious that passenger rails, passenger fares have gone down because the passenger lines simply are not working. So the question we need today is, what is the solution? It's just basically saying that we need money, but there's no issue as to, you know, there's no solution presented as to where that subsidy is going to come from. And that takes me to a point of, which comes up in the slide 35, is, are we considering two things? First of all, public, private sector partnerships, where we bring in people that are experts in rail and actually work with government to improve the situation, and that those private sector companies can source their own funding and work with governments and their funding. Is that being considered as a possibility? And then secondly, decentralizing to provinces, where provinces can also enter into public-private sector arrangements to run their own lines. And on top of that, like we've done in the Western Cape, where the city of Cape Town is appointed a whole legion of, you know, transport or railway security officers who actually are majorly involved in monitoring lines and corridors. What sort of thought has gone into that sort of private-public partnership? And then there's another little question I have, is that something I picked up in my own oversight during COVID is that in certain KZN lines, and I'm quite sure it's across the country, the aluminium conductors had been stolen. You could drive literally, Chair, for kilometers and kilometers and kilometers along a line, and you just saw all the aluminium conductors had been removed, and the cables were just hanging. Where are we on in terms of getting that sort of thing sorted out? Okay, thank you, Chair. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Honourable Team, Honourable Five.
Thank you very much, Chair. In front of me, I thought it was going to be Honorable Abbey. I don't see it.
Oh, my apology, my apology.
That's what I was expecting as well.
Honorable Abbey, the floor is yours. My humble and sincere apology.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. No, Chair, mine is very short. You know, I'm a bit concerned about the Eastern Cape. It looks like Prasa does not have any plan for Eastern Cape, because when the presentation was made here, we're told of we are working on that, we will work on that. There is no clear plan. You know, in Eastern Cape, we are struggling in terms of transport. It's one of the provinces where you struggle a lot in terms of transport and public transport. And you would find out that most of our roads become a mess because so many trucks had to drive on the main roads because there is no alternative for them. So if you don't have rail around, then it means you're going to keep on experiencing such problems. Now, what I want from Prasa is time frames. You know, they have to give us a clear plan with time frames. What is it that they are going to do in Eastern Cape? We can't just be told we are working on that. We don't know when will that, how. At least there must be a clear plan so that we could understand, as they mentioned, what they are doing in Gauteng, what they are doing in other provinces. Eastern Cape must be treated equally so. Thank you very much, President.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Flery. Honorable Hai.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to everyone. And also thank Prasa for the presentation. Firstly, Chair, I want to maybe that our committee secretary must please make sure that at least by Friday, because we have these meetings on Wednesday, at least by Friday, we must have the presentations from department and entities. I tried my best to go through the presentation after our plenary session yesterday. And when I checked the time that we received the report, this presentation, it was after 10. And at that time, we were in a meeting, in another Sister Select Committee meeting. And immediately after that, we had a plenary session. And I was able to only read or go through the presentation last night. So I tried my best, but I also see that the presentation, the slides are not, most, some of them are not the same as the one that we're having. And I want to make a request that the one that the acting CEO was presenting should also be shared, because there are slides that we don't have. Even when the Honorable Bretterson was calling out slide numbers, that page numbers were not the same as those that the acting CEO has. I think the issue of the acting CEO will raise it maybe when we meet with the minister, because some of these things, we read them in the papers and we don't know what is happening. I don't want to raise it now, but we'll raise it when the minister, deputy minister, is present. Because there's always been problems of governance in PRASA, and then we're happy when there was a CEO, but all of a sudden, in reading the papers, that the CEO has been suspended and there has not been any briefing to the committee. But I agree also with the Honorable Professor that we should have PRASA as our central focus. Remember, Chair, we once discussed in the joint management committee meeting around that particular issue. Before COVID, we were even seeing some of our meetings, we could have them in the form of oversight and also meeting, especially around Cape Town. But I want to further formalize it that perhaps we could still have those meetings in Cape Town, in Gauteng, in Durban, so that all these things that have been reported, we can also be witnesses to those things. And perhaps PRASA may provide us with the with boardrooms, maybe to discuss other issues of the committee as well. But I think also, Chair, perhaps when we write to PRASA, invite PRASA to our committee meetings, we should also indicate perhaps the issues that we raised in previous meetings, so that they first respond to those issues. Because it's frustrating to raise issues over and over, but when we invite PRASA to come here, they don't say anything about the issues that we raised previously. The issue that Honorable Plini is raising, we've raised it a number of times, that there are 9 provinces in South Africa. If you go to the minutes, particularly those of PMG, this issue was raised in the meeting when the last time PRASA was here was on the 8th of September 2021. We raised quite a number of issues there, including the issue of marginalizing other provinces. We raised these issues of problems of signaling in the line, between East London and Berlin, the vandalized stations in that line. We raised quite a number of issues, but there's no response now with regard to those challenges. And sometimes, for example, now I know that the contract that the acting CEO say has been cancelled. The train that is referring to has now been one of them has been sent to East London and as a trial for East London area. But all the new ones are now going to Gauteng, Durban, and Western Cape. So other provinces are just treated like their second citizens. So that's one of the complaints. But the second issue, Chair, I want to raise is that perhaps you should consider having all the other relevant people that have been mentioned, departments and entities that have been mentioned, to address some of the problems that are being raised. For example, the issue of Nyanga, it was raised in September. Surprised that it has not yet been resolved. At the time, Prasa was saying that, especially the board chair himself, was saying that there was a meeting that was being arranged between him and the then Mayor Plato at the time on this particular issue of settlement, informal settlement Langa, Langa line. But now there's a condition that the target is December to fix the problem, but the condition is that is the issue of resettlement. If then there's no resettlement, then I mean the target of December won't be met. So I want to suggest before the December deadline, Chair, that a meeting between the relevant parties are convened, is convened between PRASA, the Department of Transport, the Department of Human Settlement, and HDA, as mentioned, the city of Cape Town, so that this matter is also addressed once and for all. But also a similar meeting with the Minister of Transport and Minister of Public Enterprises, because the PRASA is also raising challenges with the, particularly with the lines of that are owned by Transnet. I'm suggesting that another meeting could be arranged to address this, because this is one government, so I don't understand why there should be challenges. From outside, you would think that perhaps there's a tension between the two departments or two ministries. So those are things that need to be addressed. On the issue of security, I think for me, it should be the priority, because even if you do all these other things, if the issue of security is not addressed, there's no guarantee that those, for example, the coaches that are being refurbished, because some of them were caught fire in the yard of PRASA. That means there was no security. I think the other thing that, I mean, I don't know how many times the Honorable Brotter said, has raised the issue of the drones. Every meeting, when we met with the department, when the DG was still there, Dr. Alec Mower, who's now in the public works and infrastructure, that issue has been consistently raising it. So it's one of the issues that when you raise something, it's not noted, we don't get a feedback with regard to what you've raised, whether it is a positive, because it would be better if you come back and say, what you raised last time is not practicable. rather than just ignore the advices that we give or the comments that we make. Suppose I don't know how many times, even with the questions to the minister, he will raise this issue. He's been raising it quite a number. We've also been assisting in raising this issue. But there's no response whether it is possible or not possible, so that we don't continue to raise something that is not possible. But also I would like to have to get an update, Chair, with regard to also around the issue of security, because last time there was a report that there would be 3,100 protection officials. How far has the department gone with regard to the implementation of such? Agree with him with regard to the issues of the skills, development program, but also the issue of placement. It's one thing to give skills to people, but it's another thing to ensure that they get placed. So that those skills are used adequately. But I also agree with him on the issue of the appointed contractors, that out of four will still be developed. Yet you still expect those four contractors to also train the 20 youth within the contract. But also, I just want to also find out that within this 7.5 billion, whether the 2,000 in terms of jobs, is it going to come out of the 7.5 billion or is it outside the 7.5 billion? Is it the 7.5 only for the refurbishment? So there will be another money for paying the 2,000 workers and the training of the youth, if I get clarity also with regard to that. But also if you can just break down that 7.5, because this one is for over a period of 5 years, just break it down to 1 year, and also what does it mean in terms of a coach, how much would the coach cost to refurbish it, to just bring a big figure, but also over a longer period. It's going to confuse us. Just give us a bit yearly, how much that 7.5 billion, also how much do you refurbish one coach. But also perhaps related to this development of the new entrants, who will be responsible for developing them, and how much will be paid for the people that will be then responsible for developing the new entrants. Basically those are the issues, Chair. But we do note the progress. It's not that everything, we do note the progress that has been made since the last time the Brasa was here, the corridors, and also the presidential project. We do see the progress in terms of the report that is before us. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khai, for those questions as raised by the referees to the team. Maybe just one to two questions from my side, Chair. What is the effectiveness and the efficiency of the 596 marshals that were appointed, like as Honorable Khaya has indicated, there was a target of 3,100, but the last time when we engaged, we informed about the 596 that were appointed, but also the retired I think there's a brigadier that was appointed, but also the relationship that subs is heading with Praza, because we're informed that in terms of the security tender, there was a close collaboration between the two. So we just wanted to check progress around those interventions, because clearly from the presentation, the security remains an issue. And therefore, one would want to test the measures that were put in place in the past that were raised to us. When the strat plan was presented, because one thing that has been quite clear right at the beginning when entitled to Plaza has been the story which they characterized, I think, at some point as a business problem, and we're informed about the measures that will be put in place to sort of restore the business to order, and correctly so, we're even informed about the technological improvement that will be infused in the security apparatus in terms of drones that were presented to us. Maybe just to get a sense as to, in terms of some of those aspects, is there a case to suggest there is progress? Like as Honorable Hayes indicated, we are mindful of the progress that has been made, but I think it is important that the security, because it remains a concern. What is it that has to be done to urgently ensure that the situation is restored? But just the last point, we informed last time that the issue of the Glad Africa appointment will be taken on review. How far is that matter? Has it been resolved? Other than that, let me give over to the chair and also
chair.
To you.
Just before that, can we just get an indication from the CEO? Because currently in East London, there's no train service, and that has been happening for months now. The service there were stopped, and still today, people can't get a service. There was a service between East London and Berlin, but as we speak now, there's no service. If we can also get an update with regards to when is the service going to resume in East London, like, thank you, sir. Sorry for that.
No, thanks, Chair. I think we will definitely give over to the acting CEO. But of course, we are also mindful of, I think this is the last two bullet points that the acting CEO has presented. The funding required, and those bullet points that we are raising definitely are areas that would expect to be raised when we engage with the leadership of the transport department. I think these bullet points are quite important under funding, because when you look at the regress that is captured under the slide that talks to operational subsidies, the number of passengers that has been lost between 2008 and 2019-20. I mean, these numbers clearly must be recovered, both in terms of the Metro Rail paying passengers, the NLS PS passengers. That's between 2018-2019-20, 3 million decline of passengers. I think it's a picture that says to us that those that were targeted to be the recipient of this public transport to a larger degree because of the nature of the challenges and problems that are presented are no longer the beneficiary. So it's a matter that we need to attend to as a matter of agency. Thank you. Over to you, Chair. Let me see you and Mr. Angelo.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if my chair want to go first, so I can then address the questions.
Hence I said the chair. Mr. Ramasagani.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Well, I thought I was going to go last, but let me go first.
No. The ball is in your court. You can decide to give over to the acting CEO, and then you then wrap up and also give us your last remarks.
Okay. I think that the group CEO can go first.
Thank you, Mr. Magalana.
Thank you to my leader, and thank you to the chair of the committee. Let me start from the bottom up. The issue of security on its own, we've made remarkable strides within security. It's a presentation on its own in terms of the impact it has made. As I highlighted as an example, Chair, Mabopane is an example where we've deployed security and not a single incident in that environment from an asset theft or vandalism has been experienced since we opened and launched Mabopane. But let me get into some of the things that we have done to date in that environment. I think one of the things that I'll need to do is acknowledge the fact that we've not had an update since we last presented to the committee, and therefore it's left a gap in terms of how far we are and how far we've gone. But the security scenario in my presentation to another select committee was that at peak, we had around 10,000 boots on the ground. That's combined in-source and outsourced. When we canceled the contract somewhere in 2019, we depleted that capacity to 2,000. We quickly had to ramp up by adding the 3,100 that's much spoken about. And the question is, how far have we gone since we came into this committee around that 3,100? Chair, I'm happy to announce to this committee that we employed all 3,100, which then took our internal capacity to around 5,050. But I also want to highlight that we've had COVID impacts and other things that impacted that number. We're currently sitting with the insourced capacity of 4,922. Effectivity, I've highlighted already as an example, we're covering Mabopane properly. We're covering the Jamestown line properly. We're now in phase two, where we're bringing in the private sector as a force multiplier. So we've got a hybrid model. We've got insourced, that's just close to 5,000. We're bringing in private companies to cover the rest of the gap and also maximize on that experience of the private sector. What does that mean in terms of other facets of security? We have seen in Mabopane, for instance, the capacity of technology and the benefits of thereof being used. So drones, as we speak, the companies that have been allocated the work within the Mabopane line are using drones as we speak. So we're not talking whether it's a possibility or not a possibility. We are using that to date. It's something that we also need then to look into building that capacity internally in the insourced part. But the private companies that we've contracted are using those technologies, and we get videos all the time around what they're seeing, what they've seen. We're also using them in certain areas to clear our rail reserves as part of that contract. And it's then given us clarity and visibility in terms of what then happens around our rail reserves. So that has happened. I think last time when we presented in front of this committee, Chair, we were talking about e-guarding and technologies. That was the strategy. But when we reviewed that strategy, we had what we referred to as the integrated security plan. Part of phase one of that was to get boots on the ground and the ability to dispatch response to whatever the technology is going to pick up. Because when we looked at it logically, it wouldn't have worked if we had deployed technology first and whatever technology was going to pick up, there was no one to respond or to dispatch to go and resolve the issue. So we've taken boots on the ground first. Now we're infusing technology into that. We're now at a point where we've put a specification together in terms of what is currently required from a technology point, both cameras, e-guarding, body cameras themselves, and the drones. So we're bringing that into the picture as part of our security. Are we stabilizing security? If I had the time to present the graphs and statistics in terms of how far we've gone, I would be able to demonstrate to you out of the simple graphs that the number of incidents have gone down across all categories, including arrests, including convictions as well. So those numbers are there. I therefore, Chair, I think through the request that came from Honorable Hai on the oversight, to say maybe as part of that oversight, we then be given an opportunity to present on the security and how far we've gone onto that and the impact thereof, including the statistics, because it's one area where we've been able to arrest a decline. It is not where we want it to be, and it's running in phases following how much resources in terms of money is coming. As I highlighted, the operational expenditure component is required in a balanced form to fund this component. So I just wanted to dwell a little bit in terms of the security, how far we are vis-a-vis where we were the last time we presented to the committee. Honorable Chair, you've also highlighted the concern on patronage. And it is our concern as well, because it impacts on the revenue that we so much require to run the operation itself, not only on the capital side. So what are we doing and what we see as a recovery of that patronage? One, we're piggybacking on the road to rail strategy, and we need to respond to that as an implementation arm of the Department of Transport. Part of which is, firstly, we recover the corridors where there's high usage of the rail, and the reason why It's actually exactly the reason why we've chosen the top 10 priority corridors, because this is where the masses of our people initially are. We then need to look at predictability versus reliability, which is then talks about the automation and the signaling. The more the frequency of the trains, the more the timetable is predicted, the more we'll encourage the patronage back into the rail environment. And it is exactly the reason why we're investing this much money on the signaling and the communications thereof. So the quicker we recover these top 10 corridors, the quicker we'll get the masses and majority of the users of the trains and our people and those communities back into rail. So we want to, and we are going to recover these top 10 corridors in this year so that we can then take back the masses of our people. The one last component onto that, on the corridor recovery, is making sure that where our communities access the trains, the bigger stations in these areas are repaired as well, because access to the rail becomes important as well. So we are focusing on that. So in each of the corridor recovery plans, it covers all the pillars. One is the rail itself, two, the electrical components, the substation component, and lastly, the stations themselves. So we need to focus on the stations as a form of access into the rail. As you know, I think it's been out there that our stations in majority of our corridors have been taken out, and we're busy revitalizing that as part of our corridor recovery plan. We've also gone as far as arming and bringing armed responses into our security check. We've included bulletproof vests, the tools. We're now in the process of finalizing armaments so that we can then respond to these heavy artillery type attacks that we see in the system. So we are responding quite well in the security. But again, I'm taking the offer from Honorable Hai. I think in the last oversight of other committees that we've seen, it becomes such a pleasure to get the support and also to be able to demonstrate that one, the kind of challenges that we see, and two, the impact of the intervention, and also demonstrate the progress we've made. So I'm excited that the committee wants to do an oversight, and maybe it's opportune as we go through this, the recovery of the next corridors, for the committee to come through so we can then demonstrate how far we are for that appreciation of both the challenges and the amount of work that we've done in the system. So Chair, that's coming from bottom up, covering your part. Honorable Hai, I must apologize on the delays of the presentation number one and two. I think we changed the pages. We swapped some of the slides and we put them others first. And let me apologize on that one. In terms of the issues which were raised previously, I've taken that and I'm acknowledging that in the next meeting firstly, we will have to deal with those. And if need be, Chair, through you, maybe write back to the committee and then supply the information that was not covered in this presentation. And I'd like to do that. I will go back with the team and look at the kind of things that were raised previously, write back and submit through the department on the issues that we've not covered today in this presentation. The issue of Eastern Cape, Chair, just to highlight the challenge that we had initially and why we stopped the train since then and for so long. The debt that we had with Transnet got us to a point where they could not even carry on with that, and they ended up pulling the locos that we were using in that environment, the diesel locos we were using in that environment. It left us with a gap there. What have we done to date in that environment? We've now since sent locos that we've pulled out of other environments and also contracted down to the Eastern Cape. As we speak, Chair and Honorable Members, the plan is to relaunch the diesel traction service in the Eastern Cape by tomorrow. It's one of those that I did not say as part of the presentation. So we are relaunching the diesel traction both in East London and Klebecha or PE area tomorrow as we speak. So we are running those trials and we'll be reintroducing that. And as far as the new rolling stock is concerned, in the other areas, we're currently running the 3 kV electrical network. Eastern Cape runs a 25 kV network from a Transnet point of view. One of the things that we're considering is to produce fewer units within the Gibela plant for that environment, because it's got 25 kV, and I don't think Transnet has got plans to change the 25 kV to 3 kV. So that's what the one option that we have. The other option is to create a customized few sets which have got their own, they carry their own what we call power cars, so they can run in that environment. So we don't want to leave Eastern Cape out of the benefit of the new rolling stock at all. So it is in the plan. We have once run a trial train that was in the system, basically, Chair, in that environment to see how else we service that environment. The partnership with Transnet is critical. I cannot overemphasize the improvement we have seen in my interaction with CEO Poshia Dabi to get closer so that we can service the environment and service both passenger and freight accordingly. So we are a lot more closer to each other and resolving each other's problems and supporting each other in there for the benefit of both freight and passenger. So we're working closely. Honorable Khai, you've also raised the collaboration between departments, more so when it comes to the central line. I want to highlight this without speaking on behalf of the ministry and the minister himself. He's taken ownership of this and he has coordinated a number of meetings that pulled Department of Human Settlements, Public Works, he's pulled in the MEC of Transport in the province, he's pulled in the mayor and the deputy mayor and the officials to a point where in the last six or so weeks, we've had two engagements with the communities down in the Philippi and Khayelitsha area already addressing their issues around resettlements. So we are collaborating, led at the moment. The relocation itself, I think the implementation protocol for the resettlement has been signed, is being project managed by HDA. The department has funded that project management, and Human Settlements has taken ownership in terms of acquiring the land for that. And the city is coming in terms of the preparation of the land for resettlement. So we've got that coordination carrying on, and it's one thing that I know that both the department from the acting DG point of view and the ministry are looking at this so that we can then get the trains back running in central line. The last presentation that we were called in between ourselves and Transnet through DPE and National Department of Transport, we were presenting together on the road to rail strategy and what we're doing in both networks and how we work together a lot closer. I'm saying this to demonstrate the fact that we're working a lot closer, and we've presented before in another committee showing how we're working together to achieve the road to rail back. So we are working a lot closer. Honorable Khai, the question on the 7.5 billion over 5 years. Just to give a high level summary, at a high level, the spend is around 1.5 billion a year. Looking at refurbishing around 400 units per annum, we're estimating that a coach should cost between 3 to 4 million, but it depends on the status of that coach. So due diligence, because they are not damaged or affected the same. Others are a lot more, others a lot less. But at an average, it's around 3 to 4 million per coach. The jobs we're referring to are primarily indirect. We are not going to hire such people. We've got service providers that we've given all this work to, and we are estimating that the job creation across all this will be 2,000. But just to dive a little bit on the setup and the configuration of the contract itself, when we went out to the market, we wanted 10 service providers spread across all the provinces. The rigorous process that we have run ended up with 5. We are busy reassessing on whether the 5 will be able to carry and accelerate the revamp of this work that needs to be done over 5 years. I think at a high level, led and directed by the board, is to go and consider on whether we can issue a supplementary market approach to beef up and deliver on this 7.5 billion, which will then see us maybe and I want to commit on this up until we've done the work, more than this 2,000 that we're seeing. When we say it's new entrants in there, it's people that were not in the contract before, but they were elsewhere in the industry. They could have been working with Transnet or in the mining industry in that. So they're not necessarily in the rail industry new entrants, but in as far as the contract itself with PRASA, they were not there before, but they are rail players. We see them ramping up and being developed in terms of how we work together, because they would not work with us directly. So in essence, there are three basically parties where this rail industry service providers work with. It's the mining industry, it's the Gautrain space, it's PRASA, and it's then Transnet. And they've been working somewhere in there. So when we say new entrants, we're talking about the old contract versus the new contract. So in summary, that's what it is on that general overhaul tender. Honorable Broadus said the quarterly engagement vis-a-vis oversight and the focus on PRASA, I welcome that, because again, it gives us an opportunity to come back to the committee to demonstrate the challenges and also demonstrate the progress we're making. In certain cases, we've also seen the advice coming from members of the committee, which are more than welcome. And I think we'd like to maximize on that. I've spoken around the four entrants versus out of the five and what it means, and the fact that we're going to go into a supplementary based on the work that's underway at the moment. Youth training and the SAQA qualification, it's information, Honorable Chair, that the detail of which, without trying to do that and maximize it on here, I'd like to provide to the committee. And if through you, Chair, I ask that we respond to you in writing. And also at a date that we'll have communicated and agreed on, when you do your oversight, we then present that and the impact thereof. There's a lot of detail in there, more especially within the slide that talks about Givela, with all categories on what type of engineers, how many of them, what level of qualifications, and where they've been absorbed, whether they've been absorbed within ourselves or the Givela themselves or elsewhere in the industry. And we'd like to present that and demonstrate that. But Chair, may I request through you that we put that in writing and demonstrate exactly what that information, the detail of which we have. Walling component, why we say long term? When we initially got into the design, and I think we had looked primarily on Mabopane and Central Line, the sizing thereof came up with a 7.2 billion number. We had to look into this and say, if we're spending 7.2 billion only on two corridors, is it the right thing to do in 2 years, or should we then go and cover the rest of the other hotspots? And the strategy right now is to go and look at the problematic areas. Money versus the time and also the response, because these are long projects. We've now taken a phased approach. In Central Line, we've identified the hotspots, and that's where we are going to deploy. In Gauteng, we've already started. So work package 1, 2, 3, including the important buildings, the important stations, the hotspots, and where majority of our assets are sitting, those projects have been triggered already. So it's a phased approach. Again, we're looking at the money in terms of what's been allocated and the availability thereof, and then we put that in the different phases. So we're not saying long-term, just to step back, Honorable Protesef. We are looking at that vis-a-vis the resource, the amount of resource that we have, considering we also need to spread that capital expenditure into modernization, also the recovery of the corridors as well. Drone technology and the e-guarding technologies I've spoken to, but I must also add to say the walling itself is integrated with the technology. So we're running fiber onto that so that we can then have high speed and a high resolution cameras that will be part of that, plus the sensors onto the walls that will sense any destruction and disturbances onto the wall or trials and attempts to access the network. The funding component, I think I may have missed an opportunity to put it properly in there. We're not, in the request that we've put out, we're not asking for necessarily more money. We're asking for a balance. We've got capital as allocated to date to specific projects. What we're asking for in the shortage of our operational expenditure is to transfer some of that into operations so that we can then manage some of these challenges that we have. PPPs and decentralizing to provinces, I think that's been addressed in the white paper. I wouldn't want to speak on behalf of the department on that, but it's the concessioning is in there in the white paper, which will then expand into some of the areas that we ourselves have not reached into in other provinces. For instance, an example of concessioning Tabanchu to Bloemfontein has been put on the ground. It's out in the Free State area. So those have been made provision for in the current rail policy, and I think they need to be dealt with within the, including the devolution strategy. And I wouldn't want to speak on behalf of the department on that one. The scrap and aluminium attack that we have, it's commodity at the moment, and that's part of the problem. We've seen Kenya, for instance, responding to this by banning scrap dealings. I know DTI is looking into this, and the outcome of which is going to come back, but we do need that to be considered because it does affect us. But copper at the moment is one of those commodities that's been sought after, and it affects our contact wires in particular. There is work of syndicates. Let's not ignore that. There are portions in the network where you find the cable has been cut, but it's not been taken away, which tells a different story. It's not stolen, but it's been cut, just to disable the service. And those are the type of challenges that we're dealing with from a security point of view. But we are responding to that, as I said, within the integrated security plan. Eastern Cape, in terms of clear plan, Honorable Apleni, I think I've highlighted that as I responded to Honorable Hai. There is a plan. There are options that we've got on the table. There is a current response from an interim point of view. There are discussions that are carrying on with Transnet on how best we cater for both freight and commuter. But at the moment, the emphasis on giving priority to the commuter vis-a-vis freight is what we are applying. And we, in our engagements, we call it an interface agreement. We've put that on the table when we need to monitor that continuously. So we do have a clear plan in as far as that is concerned. Where we don't have something to put on the table at the moment is a blue and gray train that's been customized exactly for the Eastern Cape. But are we going to have that in the future? Yes, there is a plan to have that in the future. Honorable Tango, you are right in terms of other lines that need to come in and the branch lines that need to come in. But as I said, we looked at where the majority and the bigger masses are coming from a corridor and the bigger corridor point of view, started with that first in a phased approach. As we speak, the Midway, Joburg to Midway line towards Vereeniging is now in plan for the next half of the year. So we're going to go out to the market, accelerate that. We will come back when we meet with the committee in terms of where we place it in terms of the plan going forward. So that is Midway, is the Randfontein line, is the Nigel line, there is the Davyton line as well inside there. So there are a few other lines within Gauteng that we're looking into that are part of this going out to the market to go and find the service providers and put a project plan. We currently are running a war room within PRASA that manages how we recover. And each time we put a corridor as one of the priority, it gets into the program and it gets monitored right from planning right up until the end when the service has been recovered. Chair, I don't know if I've missed any of the other questions that have been raised by honorable members, but if I have, I'm happy to cover that. But the one last component, the depots in terms of protecting our rolling stock and our other assets as well. We're spending close to R1 billion at the moment, and the projects have been triggered to fence 7 depots. So your Pardon Island, Salt River, Springfield, Durban, Bramfontein, the East London one, and also Volmartin, they are in there, and that we are fencing them as well as we speak. So the last part, I think the difference between the marshals versus the security, 3,100 versus the marshals. We had a system where we put in what we refer to as PR2P. We are looking into that, and it's coming in the form of cooperatives. So we want to revamp that. We've had to go back into the system so we don't find ourselves on the irregular part. So as you can imagine, part of our old reports with Auditor General has been irregularities. So we want to do things properly, and we're categorizing the engagements, and we want to do it within the governance. So the PR2P portion will come in within the cooperative space as compared to into the security space, where other things are going to be required. For instance, your CIRA certification kicks in, wherein your marshals are not necessarily don't have CIRA certificates, but they do impactful and critical work. So we need to bring them in accordingly. The GLAD Africa update, I don't want to speak off 10 here. It's something that we're working on, and I think you're going to get news very soon in as far as the status thereof is concerned. May I request, Chair, that on that one, as soon as we've concluded on the legalities, we come back to this committee and report the progress and the status thereof accordingly. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mpelo, for responding to those questions. Any follow-up questions from honorable members? I've noted honorable Dango. Is that a legacy hand, or is it a follow-up hand, honorable Hyde and honorable Dango? I guess it is a legacy hand. Let's then give over to the chair, Dr. Samakagani. Any last word from your side?
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair and the committee. I think that Group CEO, Acting Group CEO has dealt with almost all the question that has been presented. All I want to do is to say to the Honorable Committee that around the issue of collaboration or the issues that deals with this concessioning, all that area that deals with partnership, the rail policy has at least provided much more clarity around that. In other words, encouraging that private sector could play a role in the rail system in a country, whether it's a concessioning or it's a short distance or long distance that is there. And then I need to say again, in terms of the very same collaboration, which probably gravitate towards decentralization that has been mentioned, that
white policy that we're talking about in terms of rail also makes provision on the process towards what I think Honorable Tim has talked about, the decentralization to provinces. The rail policy explain the processes that will have to be followed to that particular determination in terms of the decentralization process. So I think just to say to members, the policy is quite broad. It's a breath of fresh air. It makes provision for that. So there is going to be process that's going to be outlined for all to understand. The last point I want to make as to for completion, the question that was asked was why aren't you broader enough? People are suffering. I think we share that sentiment in terms of non-availability of rail as a mode of transport, as a cheapest mode of transport, and as a backbone of the economy of a country. If you can't move the people to go to the businesses and work situation, you run the risk of your economy going down. So this is where we are. This is what we are trying to address. We have in our five-year strategy plan, we have put in there that we need to deal with in terms of the corridor development. We said we need to deal with all of these issues within the pillars of the strategy or corporate plan, but we recognize immediately that we don't have the money to unleash work on all the 46 or 40 corridors. We will have to take 10 per year. Every year we take in 10, we deal with those issues, finishes and go to the next 10. So that's how we're starting cascading from the highest to the lowest in terms of the commuting patterns, as I think it was raised earlier by the Honorable Danko, that this is the situation. So Chair, we will always be available to account to the committee in terms of whether there are failures or successes. We're always going to have to be open with them so that you understand where we stand on the particular matters. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That's only the last few words from my side.
Thank you, Chair, for those remarks. I see Honorable Fais there.
Thank you very much, Chair. To advise the acting CEO, firstly, I would say he was very good in responding to our questions, but I would like to just advise that perhaps in future with the presentation, if there could be a slide on acronyms and their full reference or explanation. There are a lot of acronyms in that presentation, so just that advice here. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Honorable Khai. I will be acting CEO has added to your call. Let me take this opportunity to indeed express a word of
thanks. I think his hand is up, Chair. The CEO.
Mr. Antelo.
Chair, I think it's a bit out of line for me to speak after the chair has spoken, but I just thought I missed out on another question. There's a slide where we had highlighted that some things were on hold.
I needed to clear that.
So, Chair, just to take members that at some point, if you remember, there was this to and fro between the Constitutional Court and National Treasury on the guidelines, and we majority of the entities had to stop procuring, and some of those we also were affected. So we put that on hold. But we have then since triggered the processes. So those, as I sit here, some of them, as of this morning, we have now taken them out of the so-called on hold. So GSMR, for instance, is now under evaluation. Signaling is under evaluation. So majority of, actually all of them are no longer on hold since the announcement by the court as well to say we can carry on while a resolution has been found. So I needed to clear that up, Chair, and thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you for that clarity to the question that was posed by Honorable Tim. Honorable members, I think we are now at a point where we must say indeed that as I was doing, express a word of gratitude to the team led by the chair, Dadirawa Lakani, and together with his team for putting the committee in a much more better position to understand the issues around modernization program, which we were informed that it covered three areas: the rolling stock general overhaul, the rolling stock fleet renewal program, and also the signaling and communications. And we were also briefed on the rehabilitation of the passenger rail network. And we're giving the status, we're giving the challenges, we're giving the progress made, and also the finances required in terms of ensuring that these challenges are addressed. We have also had the availability for us when we embarked on our oversight visit, given the commitment that we made in the past that we will have to play an oversight role, particularly with regard to those presidential programs, more so those that were in the State of the Nation address. So we appreciate the availability. And with those few words, we expect them to do as they committed, to respond to some of those questions in writing we want to say 7 days, because from tomorrow we will also be on recess. But what we want is that when we come back in the third quarter, that we should be having those responses, so that as we process our resolutions as a committee, we take the feedback into consideration. So thank you, Chair, for leading the team, for providing leadership to the acting CEO and his team in terms of the presentation to this select committee meeting, and also to the honorable members of the select committee, my appreciation and gratitude to the manner in which you engage with the presentation. It clearly illustrates that of key concern to your work is how do we ensure that transport is a very important sector in ferrying our commuters to their place of work becomes reliable. And indeed, we will always rely on you. So my gratitude to all of you. We will now take this opportunity to formally adjourn the meeting, but there will be a management committee meeting immediately after this meeting, just to make sure that we finalize the issues around the study tour, the issue around the oversight, and also the issue around the program. So thank you, honorable members. The meeting stands adjourned.
Also, Honorable Mateula is back.
Recording stopped.
Is she on the platform?
Thank you, sir.